Welcome to Thinking Ahead, your Leading Edge Insights podcast. Each episode reveals the latest insights on today's consumers and offers a sneak peek of tomorrow's marketplace. We'll share the latest from a global and regional perspective to help you stop guessing what's next and start thinking ahead. It's March and Neil Bellamy is here with me to discuss the results from this month's UK Consumer Confidence Index. Neil, with the headline score remaining at minus 21 this month, can you explain what happened and why, please?
Hi, Lucy. Yeah, so on the face of it, very little has changed with the overall Consumer Confidence Index at minus 21, the same as in February. What's more interesting, though, is when you dig into the detail of the measures that feed into the index. First, the good news. People's perceptions of their personal finances over the next 12 months has gone up by 2 points. This is the first time this measure has been in positive territory since December 2021. But now to the not so good news. We've seen the major purchase index drop by 2 points, showing that people aren't about to rush out and start spending big on furniture, electrical products, or other major items. On top of this, the savers index has dived by 4 points, with people potentially feeling they have to use their savings more than they had intended to.
Right, okay, so I've got a couple of questions about this. The first one, major purchase index down by 2 points. So do you think that there is a connection here with feeling in control of personal finances? Is it that people feel like that because they're taking control of spending and they're just not going to buy things?
I think that's part of it. And, you know, you've got that and you've got the savings index. And in some ways, they almost come together in that people are thinking, actually, oh, you know, I'm not so sure if I got spare cash anymore. You know, and it just goes to show how people are not still so confident. And it doesn't take much for them to think, actually, oh, no, I need to save my money still, you know, tuck it away, perhaps not be buying major products. So it's that kind of like still that uncertain to consumer that we're seeing so often.
So if people are not saving because they're dipping into savings or they expect to or they need all their money right now to afford to live, does that sound that further down the line things on personal finances might potentially get worse then?
You could say that, but I think that it's, you know, we've seen it kind of move about so much over the last few months in that people are, it's still further ahead than it was a few months ago. People are feeling more secure where they are, but it doesn't take much to really, you know, make them feel a bit more negative again. So if something major happened in the world, yes, it could fall away, but I think, you know, it's more kind of a stable point and I would hope to see it go back up again in the next few months.
Okay. So from this summary, the sense I'm getting is actually very little has changed, but perhaps there are indicators of future change. Can you tell us a little bit more about the stability you've referred to and where that's coming from?
A good place to start is with the budget announcement of March the 6th. Which was, you know, right in the middle of our last fieldwork period. Now, clearly, that didn't infuse the population. And so there's not enough in there for people to think their situation is about to get any better anytime soon. And right now, people really want to see the light at the end of the tunnel. As a nation, we've been facing higher costs for fuel, rising council taxes and utilities, and rising insurance charges. And this has eroded any increases people have had in wages or other income they've received. So, you know, it's been a case of giving with one hand and taking with the other.
Yeah. So if we look back to last year, the improvements that we saw in consumer confidence, which were seen really most months since January 23, they've been eroded and have gone. So are there any positive signs in this month's data, do you think?
Well, really, March is just continuing the holding pattern we've been seeing for the last few months. So if you look specifically across the last 5 months, we can see the average is minus 21, just like we saw in February and March. So now really isn't the time to panic. We're starting to see signs that the economy is taking a turn for the better, such as with the small increase in GDP that was announced towards the end of our fieldwork period, and the latest inflation figures that came out after interviewing was complete. But now the budget has come and gone, we need to look at what else could be coming up that will impact consumers' outlook. As just mentioned, we've seen encouraging signs of inflation continues to fall. It's now down to 3.4%. And whilst the Bank of England continues to be cautious, it has started to make positive noises about future interest rate cuts, openly stating that things are moving in the right direction. This has led to the financial markets to expect three cuts of 0.25 percentage points this year, forecasting the first to take place in June. So that sounds great, but consumers won't believe this until they see it in reality. If we look more widely at what's going on later in the year, we've got two big sporting events this summer, the Football European Championships in Germany and the Olympics in Paris. We've seen from GfK sales data in the past that major international football tournaments can have a positive impact on sales of certain products. One example of this is TVs, with many people using football tournaments as a good excuse to upgrade their TV to a larger screen size or to get the latest display technology. And over the last couple of years, even with TV sales that have been largely stalled, we have seen that premium products are increasing their share of sales. So people are still willing to go and buy that top end. So the question has to be, will the Euros help to push this trend even further? The other angle on sporting events is that any kind of positive results have been known to boost the popularity of ruling political parties. So Rishi Sunak must be hoping that England, Scotland or Wales, if they qualify, come good at the Euros, plus that Team GB pulls out all the stops in Paris.
Right, so you're saying a lot of this is going to come down to sporting results.
Well, it's a lot to, place your faith into, isn't it, really? So if that's all they've got, it could be a bit of a struggle.
Yeah, okay. But that is really interesting that there's something about the national mood, which, of course, we reflect in the monthly consumer confidence research. Right, okay. So I feel like we've gone into March. So, of course, it's time for our regular spot, Data Guru Corner. We've been inundated with fan mail, obviously, about Data Guru Corner. So this month we're focusing on sampling. It is actually absolutely crucial, isn't it, in how results are delivered, how they're comparable, and how you can look at the different waves of research and figure out what's going on. So, Neil, can you tell us some more about sampling,
please? Yeah, because as you say, you know, it's really fundamental to the longevity and stability of the Consumer Confidence Index that we have comparable data sets. If we think back to January when we did the podcast then, we spoke in some detail about the questions that formed the index, with the key point being they're always worded the same and asked in the same order every month, so very consistent. Other than the questionnaire, the key to comparability is ensuring that we have a representative sample of the public and that we can replicate our approach every wave. And to do this, we interview around 2,000 individuals aged 16 or older every month. This is a robust base size, as it means that the figures we publish would only move by about 2% at most either way if we extended it to the wider population. To ensure the sample itself was representative of people aged 16 plus in the UK, we set quotas on age, gender, region and social class. For example, for region we used 9 standard splits in England, so things like North East, North West, London, East Midlands, etc. And then we have separate quotas for Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland. And then in order to reach as wide a range of people as possible, interviewing spread across a couple of weeks, including at least one weekend, as we know that some people are more prone to complete surveys at the weekend than during the week. Another key part of stability is using the same sample sources. So each month we work with the same 4 online panel partners, which means that any inherent biases are kept consistent. And then in combination, these steps make us confident that when we see changes in the index and the key questions that feed into it, that we can be sure they are genuine shifts.
Right. So just so I'm clear on this, when you say you set quotas on age, gender, region and social class, what you're doing is working out as a proportion of the overall population, how many people need to respond in order for it to be representative.
Exactly. And what we're talking about here is a nationally representative sample. So we're looking at the UK as a whole for people aged 16 plus. This is a bit different to if you're talking about a representative online sample. Now, these days, you know, most age groups have internet access, but if you were looking at online users, you'd still have fewer in the older age groups. But we want to make sure the whole country is represented in the way it should be. So that's why we set quotas to be nationally representative rather than online representative.
Got it. Okay. So when you see the term NatRep,
exactly. No, this is the view of the nation.
Okay. And another question I'm asked quite often is it the same people every month that answer the survey?
No, it's the same panel partners we work with, but it's different people. You know, you may get someone who would appear a couple of times a year who because they haven't sit on that panel, but it's different people because we want to make sure that we're not just talking to the same people all the time. We want to get a view from the wider population as possible. So we make sure the sample is the same. So you can say technically the same, but it's generally different people every month.
Okay, that is really helpful. And I think that explains it really clearly. So we can cut the data by region, income, age, gender and social class. And we can make this available for the media, can't we?
Absolutely, yes. What happens is that paying subscribers to the Consumer Confidence Index receive PowerPoint reports and Excel data tables every month with cuts for all the key demographic groups, which means you can go and explore, you know, what people on high income versus low income are thinking versus people who are ABs versus DEs from a social class perspective. So if you want more information about that, then please do let us know.
And we can look at that for the individual measures that make up the index, the five individual measures and the overall index score, can't we?
Absolutely, yes. So, you know, we can look at all the data we've got in the survey split by those groups. And part of the reason for setting quotas by the different regions is so we can make sure we've got enough. You know, we've got over 50 getting on for 100 people in each of those groups, which means we can be sure that it's a nice data set we can look at.
Yeah. And one thing I just wanted to say was when we were talking about the savings index, that is the sixth measure and it doesn't count towards the overall index score, does it?
No, that's right. But it's still available in the data with everything else. It just doesn't go into the overall index score.
Yeah. So if anyone sees that, sometimes we talk about five measures moving. That's because we are talking about the five measures that make up the index.
Absolutely.
Great, thank you. Thank you very much, Neil. That's been really helpful. And I want to thank all our listeners who take the time out to tune into the podcast every month. And we're looking forward to the April results and talking about them in a few weeks' time. Thank you for tuning in for this episode of Thinking Ahead. For more information about this topic, you can click the link in the description. Please make sure to leave us a review and let us know what you think about the podcast. And of course, if you haven't already done so, please hit the subscribe button to keep up to date with the latest insights. We'll see you next time so that you keep thinking ahead.